Hi, and welcome back to the Montgomery County Poet Podcast Series on www.montcopoet.com. I'm Dave Simpson. We hope you'll visit us often to hear interviews with poets of both local and national distinction, highlights from readings, and lively discussions related to some aspect of poetry. Our third podcast continues an interview with Marie Howe that took place on April 12th. At the end of the previous podcast, Marie was describing certain moments in her writing process that feel as if she's riding a horse, Pegasus perhaps, and just trying to hold on. In this half of our interview, she'll read one of the Marian sonnets in her latest book, The Kingdom of Ordinary Time, and talk about her close friendships with the late poets Stanley Kunitz and Jane Kenyon.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about the poems from the life of Mary. Mm-hmm. Those are basically loose sonnets, is that right?
Yeah, they're 14 lines, and they rhyme. They're sonnets. Yeah.
Now, how long have they been sort of brewing, or how long ago did you write them?
Well, I wrote them a while ago. I was loving writing them because, again, I was not, the horse was riding, you know, I was just riding the horse, if you will. I love Mary. I love the character of Mary. I love her as a female figure in our mythology. And I feel like she's a contemplative, she's active. She reminds me of so many women I know. In the world, you know.
Yeah.
So Mary's always been someone. When I was a child, I wrote Christmas plays for my family. And someone was Mary and someone was Joseph. And then as we got older, they became more and more political. By 1968, there was like an angel with a gun during the Vietnam War.
Someday we're going to want to read all these different versions.
They're really...
But that's interesting, even to say that there was an angel with a gun, because here you are. I think it's been in your other books too, but you're really trying to ask about this world that we live in that's both violent and very, very miraculous and spiritual.
Mm-hmm, both.
I wonder if you could read maybe the first, would it be all right to take the first poem out of the whole group?
Of Mary?
Yeah.
When she's talking about the moon?
Yeah.
Of course. Mary is talking as a young woman, or she's remembering herself as a young woman. These may even be spoken from before she was old enough to conceive a child, but, well, who knows? But she was still, she wasn't a mother yet.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say. She was still one person. Sometimes the moon sat in the well at night, and when I stirred it with a stick, it broke. If I kept stirring, it swirled like white water, and as if water were light, and the stick a wand that made the light follow, then slow into water again, unwobbling until the wind moved it. And I thought of all the moons floating in the wells and rivers, spilling over rocks where the water broke, moons in the sheep water and the chicken water, or here or there an oar bent it, or a woman spread out her skirt and let it pool there, the light, I mean, not the moon in a circle, not the moon itself, but the light that fell from it.
That's Marie Howe reading from her newest book, The Kingdom of Ordinary Time, and not at all an ordinary moment. it is and it isn't, isn't it? I mean, the way that, how often one can stir water, and although I can't see, that I get that sense of magic.
And the moon breaks up in the water, you know, when you stir it with a stick. You can sort of smear it.
Wow, that's
and
so
it's
cool.
So cool. And then you can sort of smear it a little bit, and then it all wobbles back into itself again, still and whole.
Yeah.
And then the fact that there's so many moons and so much water everywhere around the world, everyone's looking into. But there's also a Robert Frost moment in that poem, who's my secret. The man I love his poems so much. And there's that great moment in Death of a Hired Hand. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
When the man goes in to check on the guy and the woman sits outside on the porch, on the steps of the porch, and she She lets the moon pool in her skirt for a minute, the moonlight. And it's this beautiful little moment where she just does something to pass the time, and that's what she does. But of course, the moon in Mary's skirt is another thing altogether.
But, you know, going along with just the way this book is complicated and or deals or accepts the welcomes the complex.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we also see in one of the other sonnets of this group, this the moon is shining on the face of the man who has just broken his child's neck.
Right.
That the, in that sense, and is that a little bit like grace or forgiveness, that it's for all of us?
Or indifference. I mean, the indifference
that's
element.
A good question.
You know? I mean, I actually knew a man in Cambridge who lived across the street from us who sold coffee at the best coffee shop. You know, it's his place, and we went there every day. And one day it came out that he had killed one of his children, and in just that way. And, you know, he was the guy I thought every morning in my life. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. And, of course, we all know that we're all capable of such violence.
Yeah.
And the moon shines on, you know, the good and the bad, the just and the unjust. But also, of course, it is that sense of if there is God's grace, and I don't know where or what God is, but that it's everywhere and infinite and unremitting, you know, no matter what.
I want to ask you a little bit about your long and deep connection with Stanley Kunitz, who just died recently. Tell us just a little bit about how you met Stanley and basically what influence he has had on your life and work.
I met Stanley in 1982. I believe it was 82. My second year as a graduate student at Columbia. And I was trying to decide what workshop to take, and I signed up for his. And the joke I tell, which is a true joke, is the one of the people who were running the program at the time, one of the secretaries, came up and suggested that I not take his class. Because he was so old, and she'd take this other class, which I'm sure didn't have as many people in it, which is what she was trying to get me to move for. But he was, you know, about to turn 75 and very old. And Stanley, of course, went on to live to be 101, and I had a 25-year friendship with him that changed my life. Is my life? I mean, it just influenced every aspect of my life, as a great friendship does. You know, how can you think of yourself apart from your great friends? Stanley came in and sat down at the table, and we were all chatting away, and he picked up a piece of paper, and he was holding it between his fingers and rubbing the paper with his fingers. And I was sitting on his left-hand side next to him, and I was watching him hold this piece of paper, and I thought, that this man is actually here. He's feeling the paper between his fingers. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here.
Right.
And indeed he was right there and continued to be.
Yeah, well, and you certainly seem interested in being here, you know, just observing everything, like the way the stick affects the light in the water.
Mm.
Since you're here, in part because of the 2008 Poet Laureate competition, which Elizabeth Rivers won. I wonder if you could just say a little bit about, in general, when you are asked to judge a poetry competition, how do you approach that?
Well, I'm well aware that there really is no competition among artists, that there is no possible way of grading art. Art exists like a flower or like a river. Or, I mean, it. I'm not saying that we can't critique it, but to judge one thing against another is something I don't do. What I do is I read everything, and then I think, I go back, and then when I read them again, I pull out what I still remember, what was indelible in some way. And eventually, I winnow down to the voice that I keep wanting to go back to. That doesn't mean it's better. That means that that's the voice I wanted and needed to go back to.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember trying to read Elizabeth Bishop and throwing the book across the room and just say, ugh, you know, 10 years later, I just couldn't get enough of Elizabeth Bishop.
What do you think changed?
Everything changes. My ability to perceive her work changed. You know, Elizabeth Bishop's work didn't change. It stands there. But I couldn't enter it yet. I was too ferocious and young. I wanted everything to be dramatic and obvious and slam bang, you know. And that was fine. I wanted a kind of fierce, ferocious work, you know, to read. Bishop is all that. But it's the surface of the work. You have to calm down. Jane Kenyon, who became a dear friend of mine, when I first read Jane's work, again, I just like, ugh, you know, clothespins on a line, nonsense, I said. Because I was young, because I wanted, because I was still using my will to write poems, because I really wanted a kind of violence to happen to me. Later, when I met Jane, meeting Jane herself became, she was like a tuning fork for me. I sort of came into tune with her as soon as I met her. And I went home and I read the poems and I fell in love with the poems. You know, I had learned to slow down enough just by being with her to be able to perceive.
It's interesting because when we, you know, we were talking about the well, we didn't actually get to this part, but there is one of the other sonnets in the Mary series, which talks about what it's like to hear someone in a boat.
Oh yeah.
Halfway across the lake, mm-hmm. And that reminds me of one of Jane's mm-hmm. poems too.
Very much those wonderful poems where the campers are across the lake. Right. I adore those poems.
Yeah.
And she sees the little campers climbing and falling, and some clung to a tipped canoe. Oh, they're wonderful. I'm sure that, and I love that notion of being able to perceive from a great distance, you know, little figures.
Yeah. And how it's so real. That sense of the echo across the lake, and you can actually hear voices, even if you maybe don't know who they are and where they are exactly, but you can hear them in the dark.
The intimacy of that's an amazing feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it just goes along with so many other kind of little miracles like
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really have enjoyed talking with you, and I wish we could talk longer.
Me too, Dave. It's always a pleasure to be with you and to talk with you.
If you'd like to be notified automatically of future podcasts, visit our website, www.montcopoet.com, and click on the link entitled Montco Poetry Podcasts with 2007 Poet Laureate David Simpson. This is Dave Simpson saying thanks for listening, and come back soon.